Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams
and Elizabeth Wallace, and you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 401. And tonight, we're recapping two episodes of Lore Olympus. We are going to start with episode 268, which is available for free right now on the Webtoons app. And then we're going to go straight into 269, which is only available if you're fast passing, because of course we are. And oh my goodness, I hope the commenters are all happy because a lot of things happened in these two episodes.
Yes, yes. It was another one of those where my heart was in my throat the entire time, especially in the very beginning of episode 268, because we start right after Apollo has demonstrated that touching Persephone's arm means he can harness her fertility powers. And you see him in the beginning of this episode, like, squeezing her arm really tight. He's obviously hurting her. And then he lets her go, and she drops to the ground. And he shows no concern for her whatsoever. He just starts declaiming to his audience what just happened and what that means for him needing to marry Persephone.
Yeah, he goes on to this whole thing about how back in the day, Gaia was this all-powerful goddess, but she was reckless, and she created monsters that still terrorize people to this day. And that all happened until Ouranos stepped in to help her. I swear to God, it's all so gross.
It is like the most disgusting version of patriarchy you can imagine. I mean, think about any case where women are told that, well, they can't do this type of dangerous work or play in this sport because they might get hurt. Or if they need to have an abortion, then they need to be shown the ultrasound and have someone talk to them for like ages about the consequences, because obviously their poor little woman brain wouldn't be able to make their own decisions. Someone's obviously been influencing them to make the wrong decision. So yeah, it's like that the entire time. Apollo is telling everybody that Persephone has been damaged by her union with the underworld. So now he's annulling her marriage and she is going to have to marry him.
And then, thank God, you've got Hermes, Poseidon, and Ares, and they're standing there and they're going, well, excuse me, you just used her powers perfectly fine. Why the hell do you need to marry her?
Yeah.
I'm like, good question.
Yeah, my notes here. Good point.
And Apollo, of course, steps around that by saying, oh, there's only so much he can do while she's still married to Hades, and that's why they need to annul the marriage. And I'm like, ugh, gross.
Yeah, and Persephone says that she's still trying to talk to Erebus. And then Apollo is just very slimily questioning, how is that going? I mean, obviously your drill hasn't worked, and you haven't been able to open the doors, so you really don't have any choice other than to marry me. And first of all, how did he know about the drill? Was that something that had disseminated, or is there somebody snitching to him in the underworld?
I don't remember how much of that stuff was broadcast when they're talking about trying to save the mortal realm and trying to save Hades and everything. I don't know how much people know.
But you see Persephone, and she looks absolutely crushed, because she knows that the mortal realm has to be saved, and she doesn't know why her powers were making whatever plague it was worse. So she's looking down, and then, you know, after Apollo had said, you don't have any choice, and you hear someone say, yes, she does. And then Hera marches up.
Oh my goodness, she looks so good too. She just looks so tough and badass. And she tells Apollo that she can get Persephone to Erebus, and Apollo says that she's lying. And then she says, you're the one trying to force marriage on someone who so obviously despises you and holding everyone ransom to your nonsense with this ridiculous broadcast. It's really very tacky, just like your mother.
Yes, Hera threw a yo mama at him.
Oh my goodness, and he looks furious.
Yeah, he actually tells her at one point, he leans in and says that I will do everything in my power to make your life miserable. And Hera just smiles back and says, that's what they all say.
Oh man. Now, Hera says she's doing this because she thinks that given a chance, Persephone can fix it. And Persephone's kind of trying to stop her from doing this. She doesn't want Hera to go down and face Cronus because she knows how awful that would be. But Hera's just going straight forward with it. And Apollo finally says, whatever, you know, it's just so condescending and smug, and says that they have 24 hours, and if it doesn't work, she has to come back here and accept her fate.
Yeah, and Hera says, we'll do it in 12. So she is so confident. But the last thing she does before she marches away is she snatches the microphone away from Apollo and then spills the tea to everybody, especially Ares, that Apollo had threatened Hebe by making her think that everyone would believe that she had tried to poison her own father and that Hebe had gotten so terrified that she'd run away and collapsed in the snow in the mortal realm. And then the last thing you see of Apollo is him going, maybe we can discuss this. And there's Hermes and there's Ares and I think there's Poseidon too. And they're all just like, they're going to fuck him up. So yeah, that was I hope he gets even worse than what he got than when Hermes punched him after saying, I'm the victim here.
Oh my goodness. My fingers are crossed. I would have really loved to have seen that fight. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's Rachel Smythe doesn't show that type of violence because we didn't actually see the moment when Hermes had punched Apollo. And we don't see what happens when the gods go after Apollo, but I'm sure it's going to hurt.
Now, something I noticed, and I was gratified to see that the commenters also noticed this because I was hoping this wasn't just wishful thinking. It almost looks like Apollo is like sweating or crying a little bit after his little demonstration, but it's gold colored and it's also coming out of his ears. He's bleeding. And that means whatever it was that Ouranos gave him, it's not something as straightforward as Apollo is using Persephone's fertility powers. Something's happening to him. I think it might actually be draining him. So you can only hope that after whatever happens with this dust up with the gods and he marches away, that he collapses in private. Because I think Ouranos has a much bigger plans than just like being the power behind the throne with Apollo in charge.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Apollo is kidding himself if he thinks he's actually going to be in charge once all this is done. Oh, there's no way. Okay, so you see Persephone and Hera, and they're sort of flying away in the sky. Persephone is still trying to tell Hera that she doesn't have to do this. And while they're talking, Hecate shows up and Hecate looks really pissed off.
Yeah, and she's upset that Hera has given them just 12 hours to fix this. And she says, you guys can talk on your way to Tartarus. And that's where the episode ends because it's just like time's a wasting. So they have got to get going. And also Hecate gives Hera 30 minutes to wrap up her affairs. And well, she doesn't say that, but I know that's what Hera is thinking because that is what Hera is doing at the start of the next episode.
So we jump straight into 269, which is only available if you're fast passing. And it's straight to Hera talking to Zeus, who's unconscious. And I love how she says, she's just telling him that she doesn't think she's going to make it through this. She thinks he may be dying too. And I love how she says, I love you, but you've always made me so tired in a way I can't explain.
God, that just sums it up, doesn't it? I mean, everything she did to become queen, and she's been married to this hound dog who really doesn't take her seriously as much as he should. And it's just got to have been exhausting. But she leaves him a letter and says, if you make it out of this alive, I've left you a letter. And then she just leans forward and says, you were a pain in my ass, but you always made me laugh. And she just kisses his forehead and walks away and says, goodbye, old friend. So I think even if Hera survives this, that relationship with Zeus sounds like it's pretty much done. I mean, because he's not her soulmate. She really doesn't seem to think of him as a husband anymore. He's just a friend.
Yep. And if that wasn't enough to think, that may be the reason why the relationship won't be continuing if everybody makes it through. All of a sudden, oh my goodness, Echo comes running up and she is so angry at Hera for leaving her a note.
Because she said, you can't like drop this emotional bomb on me and then leave. And Hera is just like trying to pick up all these letters that she's dropped. And Echo realizes, why did you write everybody letters? And there's only one reason. It's because Hera doesn't think she's going to be able to talk to anybody after this. And Echo's just like, she says, I'll help you get the letters to where they need to go if you just tell me one thing. The things you said in the letter, did you really mean them?
And then you see Hera kind of look at her and then leans forward and then Hera kisses her.
I did not see that coming. I don't know if anybody saw that. But one thing that Echo said was that you can't just pull away with no explanation and then drop this emotional bomb on me. So that scene, that little flashback where we saw Echo walking away in tears, I thought Hera had figured out that Echo was reporting to Zeus, and she drove her away. But it doesn't look like that was the reason now. I mean, if Echo is saying for no reason, I mean, obviously she would have known that that was kind of a betrayal to all the trust that Hera had put into her if it turned out that she found out the only reason why she'd become her assistant was because Zeus wanted somebody to report back to him. So, Gosh, I don't know if Hera's going to find that out, but it sure seems like Hera's emotionally invested in Echo now, and that's great, because that seemed like, other than, you know, the stuff that she didn't know about, it seemed like one of the healthiest relationships that she had before the whole dust-up with Zeus and Persephone getting exiled.
And I wonder if she is in the dark about that. I mean, she and Echo seem to be a little close. Wouldn't it be interesting if at some point Echo had told her, oh, by the way, your husband hired me to keep an eye on you. I mean, I could totally see her saying that.
That would be interesting, too. Yeah. So, interesting development.
Gracious. So, we switch. I mean, it's just like we see the kiss and then we don't see anything else because it goes straight over to Persephone, who's talking to Hecate. And I like what Persephone was wearing. It almost looked a little bit like her Fury outfit.
Yeah.
Sandals and kind of a headband and everything. And she's asking Hecate if they know where Hades and Morpheus have been taken by Kronos. And Hecate basically says she thinks that they're somewhere in time. And I didn't even think about that. Kronos, of course, he has time powers.
Yeah, but he hasn't used them for a while. Hecate thinks that he may have, I don't know, drained them at some point before the whole war with him got started, which would make sense, because having time powers, that would be kind of a deal breaker. So I've got to wonder, how did he get them back? And if they, and Persephone doesn't seem to think that they're going to be able to rescue them. This mission that she's going on to talk with Erebus, with Hera having to convince Kronos to let them in, that's all about Persephone finding out what can she do to fix her fertility powers and thus fix the mortal realm.
Right, right. The Hades thing is secondary. She says something like, we have to hope that they can find their way back to us because the alternative is unthinkable. But that's the moment when Artemis shows up all cheerful and happy and says she has something to give to Persephone.
And it's my favorite moment in the entire two episodes because I've been waiting for this. You know, of course, Artemis is there to help her battle Kronos because she says, I'm better at combat than you. But before she does that, she brings something. It's Persephone's coat that Hestia wanted to give back because Hestia felt guilty about having taken it. And I'm like, yeah, she gave back the coat.
We've been saying that for like months now. We're like, do you suppose that Hestia is ever going to give her back the coat? She gave her back the coat.
Oh, and Persephone was just like, she holds it and says, I thought I didn't need this back, but it turns out I did. So she puts it on, and that's what she's wearing into battle with Kronos for whatever happens. So that's such a great image. Also makes me a little bit nervous because it feels like having her wear something that she only wore in the first few issues of this entire story, it feels like the ultimate battle move. Like, this is going to be wrapping up the series. So I hope we get more than that. But yeah, it does feel like it's a big portent of something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. This whole time I thought the coat was going to come back in the last few episodes. And I'm like, oh, dear Lord, because it really, that plus what happens next, because she thanks Artemis for coming all the way down here to give her the coat. And Artemis says, oh, I didn't come all the way down for that. I came to help. We wouldn't let you face Kronos on your own. And Persephone says, we? And it's everybody!
Everybody. I mean, even Hephaestus is there, which, you know, I have a little note here. Oh, it's Hephaestus. What happened to Eros and Psyche, Hephaestus? So obviously they're not there. But I mean, Poseidon and his wife and Artemis and Athena and all of the Gorgons who were like Hades' special servants, they're all there. And they're all there specifically to support Persephone. And Artemis says, you have allies and friends everywhere. And I do think Persephone needed to hear that because she's been so unsure of her worth this entire time. So that's a great image.
Yeah. And Hera hands her up the stairs and kind of looks at her with like this arched eyebrow and says, that's a lovely coat. And Persephone turns around and thanks everybody and says that if Hades was there, it would really mean a lot to him. And then she kind of raises her hand and she conjures the glowing bident that she had used in her battle with Kronos. And bangs it on the ground and calls out to Cronos.
And the door opens and Ares starts to go through first, but then you hear Cronos say, "The golden traitor goes first." So obviously Hera has to go through the door before anybody. And if it was me, I would have had everybody who wanted to go in crowding, like glued to her back, but that's not what they do.
Nope, nope, nope. She goes in, and the art, of course, is beautiful. All these images of her slowly going through the door and looking around, and she starts to turn around and call back to Persephone, and there's this creepy laughter, and the door starts closing. I'm like, because of course it does.
And there's that great image of Hera. She's turning around to look back at everybody, and she's like in the darkness, and you can see that one line of light on her face from where the doors are obviously closing. And Persephone darts forward, pushing the bident towards Hera, and the doors slam shut. And then you see Persephone and Hera are just kind of hanging in midair, and Hera is gripping onto the end of the bident. And that's where the episode ends.
That's where the episode ends! Ah! Oh, man. Oh, gracious. You know, so we're now, by the time this episode drops, we are almost a third of the way through the year. Mm-hmm. Almost. And Rachel did say that she wanted to finish up this series this year. So I'm like, dear Lord, we are really just barreling down towards the end, aren't we?
I think we are. Yeah. Oh, man. I read the Lore Olympians summary of the episode, and they also commented on the fact that Apollo was bleeding. And they do think this is something specifically that Ornos designed to make sure that it was draining him, possibly because Apollo can't really use Persephone's powers because Persephone doesn't love him, but Ornos may have found a way to channel Gaia's powers, and that might be like either draining Apollo or burning him out.
Oh dear. Wouldn't that be a shame?
But I did like I took a look at the comments on the Lore Olympians post, and I think it was Vittoria Amorte is the commenter, and talking about Hera telling everybody what Apollo had done, and their comment was, "Hera, release the Ares."
Oh, my goodness. If you saw his face after she said that, like, he is about ready to explode.
Because now he's so angry. Because he knew that Apollo must have done something about Hebe, and the fact that Apollo was telling everybody, it looks really suspicious that Hebe ran. Well, now they know why.
That's right. Oh, man. Something so bad has to happen to Apollo. I don't want him to, like, the whole idea of him possibly getting burnt out by using powers that he was never meant to wield. Sure, that'd be fine, but I don't want him to just burn out and die without having some type of, like, really tragic, totally stereotypical trope of a disaster movie where the bad guy who's been so awful for the most of the movie has that come to Jesus moment when he's like, "Oh my God, you were right the whole time," and then dies. I want that for Apollo.
Yes,
I have to have that for Apollo.
It's not going to be worth much unless he realizes something, either that he was wrong the whole time or that he's about to fail and everybody's going to be happy about it. So I want that moment. That would be great.
But that's it. That's the end of the episodes. And beautiful art, as always. Just so many gorgeous, lovely, lovely images.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, about the Oscars.
Gracious, gracious. Okay, so, I don't know. Spoilers, if you hadn't watched the Oscars? I always feel the need to put some spoilers in there, but I'll just go ahead and toss those out. So, Oppenheimer sure won big.
Yeah, it really did. I think Cillian Murphy earned that Oscar. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did a fantastic job. I'm very happy that Robert Downey Jr. got the Best Supporting Actor, because he was also excellent. And he's never gotten an Oscar before, has he?
I don't think so. I mean, God knows the guy has struggled throughout his life with substance abuse problems. And so it wasn't really until at some point before he got the Iron Man role that he had straightened everything out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hopefully this is a good reward for having changed his entire life, basically.
He made some smart-ass comment when he accepted the Oscar, saying, "I'd like to thank my horrible childhood and my history of substance abuse." So people make jokes about it, but he's perfectly aware. I mean, he's talking, if you look on IMDb and look at his personal quotes on his page, he has some sassy things to say about himself and about what a terrible idea it was for him to be doing that. And yet he said, "It was like I had a gun in my mouth and I liked the taste of metal." So he has firsthand experience of just how rough that is. So I hope things are smooth sailing for him now.
Me too. And of course, Emma Stone won Best Actress for Poor Things, which if you see Poor Things, I think you'll understand why, you know.
Yeah, the movie it's so hard to recommend because there are people that I know personally who hated the movie with a fiery passion. And yet I just thought it was fascinating. It's on Disney Plus now, so I need
to.
They said it was before the Oscars. I'll have to double check and make sure that it's staying there because somebody made a joke about, like, let's give a shout out to our latest Disney princess.
Gracious, seriously. You know what also I think is on Disney, no, it's not on Disney Plus, it's come on to Netflix, is I think what's it called, The Wonderful Life of Henry Sugar, and that was the live action short that won this year. Mm-hmm. That stars Benedict Cumberbatch.
I've been seeing his face show up in all the promo materials about the Oscars. I'm like, yeah, I need to watch that. I haven't seen him in much for a little while, actually. But now so the animated shorts, it was War is Over, of course.
Yes.
Now,
yeah,
it was
what's he called?
The announcer, he made some joke when announcing the animated titles. And a side note to the voters saying, oh, did you have your kids vote on this one? And a lot of people were really pissed off. It's like, animation is for grown-ups, too. And it would have been interesting to be able to call him out for that comment if the animated short about child molestation had been the one to win. So, did you even read a summary of the animations that won? These are kind of hard topics that were being tackled there. But
seriously,
the winner of the animated feature was Miyazaki's The Boy and the Heron, which for some reason I had completely disregarded in my head when I was thinking about what I wanted to win. Because 2 days before the Oscars, you and I watched Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. That was amazing. I loved every single moment of that. I could probably talk for hours about everything I loved about that movie. And I thought, well, that's it. That's going to be the one to win. And I'm like, but I saw The Boy and the Heron. I could see why the voters would go for that one, too. I think Across the Spider-Verse is more pleasing for everybody, The Boy and the Heron was a really powerful movie, so, and I won't take anything away from Miyazaki. I mean, it's hard to compete with the man, but my God, you and I were talking before the we started recording about, it's like the first 20 minutes of Across the Spider-Verse is like some of the best animation I have ever seen.
And that's like the cold open for the movie, you know? They haven't even gotten to the opening credits yet, and it's just, the music is so good, the dialogue is hilarious, I will never, ever get tired of any of the spider people who are wearing their masks, how their eyes change to show their expression. It's just hilarious every time.
And matching that with Hailee Steinfeld's acting, playing Spider-Gwen, she's talking to Manuel, he's a Spider-Man, but he's also a vampire, I think. It's kind of weird. We haven't figured out much of
is
that.
Is it Manuel or is it Miguel? I can't remember.
I can't remember. Yeah. But she's talking to him and he's telling her about how he's part of this elite strike force that is dragging people that jump to different dimensions and bringing them back to their own timeline. And she's like, could you go to any dimension using that watch? And he said, it's much cooler than a watch. She said, okay, sensitive. And just the combination of her voice and the way they shaped her movement and her eyes and her everything about her, even though you just see her eyes wearing the mask, it was all perfect. But then you get into all of the battle scenes where it's all in three dimension, everything going crazy, but you can follow what's going on. I loved every bit of it. I wish it had won. I still wish it had won.
Me too. And I just hope that this gets more eyes on it. I know that there's a third installment coming, and I've heard rumors, I don't remember if it was this one or the third one, that ended up getting pushed back a little bit because they're burning through their animators. They just expect the world of those guys, and they don't pay them enough, and they work them too hard. So I'm hoping that all the animators get all of the credit because it's so gorgeous. And there's like one scene where a bunch of people kind of come together. It's not the scene before the credits where they're fighting the vulture, which was amazing. But there's another scene where they're all coming together to battle something at the same time. And the music kicks in. And I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm literally crying. This is so cool.
And man, Oscar Isaac did an amazing job.
Wow.
He was scary. I mean, not just when he's going into like vampire mode, just when he's angry and getting in people's faces. That was damn intimidating.
And it just makes, it cracks the world wide open. It's the entire multiverse. And this is, you know, of course, Miles Morales' world is not the same world as what happens in the regular MCU that we're used to watching, but they make oblique references to it because Miguel was saying that it was the events in the first Spider-Verse movie where Kingpin, I guess, had cracked open a dimensional portal, and he's saying, you know, that's just cracked everything open and everything's all spilling out, not to mention all that stuff with Doctor Strange and all of his stupid minions over in this world over here. And she's like, who's Doctor Strange? And should he be having a medical license? It's just, and then you saw they had all these cages at one point where they had all of these different people that had been captured because they weren't in their right universes, and they were basically getting sent back one by one. And one of them is the Prowler, but it's Donald Glover. Like, it's live action Donald Glover in this cage. But of course, he's the Prowler, and the Prowler was Miles's uncle back in his world. But, you know, he's dead in his world. But he just stops and is just sort of staring at him. And Donald Glover's sort of looking down and looks up and goes, you know, it's rude to stare. And it's, oh, I love Donald Glover. He's amazing.
And I was very shocked to find out that this is a to-be-continued movie. I wasn't expecting that. I saw we were getting close to the end. I'm like, I don't know that we can wrap this up in the next few minutes. So, yep, to be continued.
Talk about stressful, the final moments of that movie. Wow, everything is just happening. You don't know how it's all going to turn out and everything. And it's so, the tension, you could just cut it with a knife for those last few moments. And you see the to be continued. You're like, no.
I can't say enough good things about how they portrayed people. Like, you know, not just Gwen and talking where she's wearing the mask, but Miles's mother is from Puerto Rico, and they're like talking to a school counselor, and the counselor mentions that he got a B+ in Spanish, and his mom was like, oh, and she's like snaps her fingers like you would do if you were Latina, that kind of attitude, I would think, just conveyed beautifully.
And I don't want to get it. Now, I was going to say something good. I was like, it's too many spoilers. You really got to watch it. It's going to be worth your time. And I think even if you didn't see the first one, which you really should see the first one, but if you go into it knowing that Miles and Gwen had kind of like saved the universe beforehand, but then they got split up at the end of the movie and Miles just really wants to see his friends again. And it's really kind of bumming him out. If you know that, if you want to, you can jump straight into the second one. But really, I think you're going to be better off if you watch the first one first, because it's beautiful as well.
Well, I have to rewatch the first one because right now I'm thinking that I like the second one better, but I don't know if that's because it is better or just because I've seen it more recently.
Yeah, true. I did hear a lot of people talking about it when it came out that these were people who had been fans of the first, and they just, it's so jaw-droppingly good. I think there's a good chance that the second one just really blew the doors off. So, I mean, back to the Oscars a little bit. The documentary shorts, it was The Last Repair Shop that won, which I think it's a good and interesting short. That's the one where I felt it was a bit overproduced. Maybe I ought to go and check it out again just to see if I still feel the same way. It's created by the LA Times.
Actually. Oh, very nice. So, what was the winner of the main documentary feature?
Oh, 20 Days in Mariupol.
Oh,
that's
wow.
That's the one where that's one of the first cities to fall to Russia, and they had a documentary team on the ground. And there's a lot of people who like to really shit on journalists for covering events and sticking their cameras in places. I mean, there's human suffering, and oh, you just got to film it for people to watch. This shit does have to be documented, because if you don't know something, it's just like a person in the United States. If it weren't for people like that filming this stuff, you wouldn't know it was happening. So as far as you're concerned, it just doesn't exist. And so these guys are putting their lives at risk, and that you have to show how bad it is, or else you won't know why this is so horrible. I really would like for anybody who thinks it's like, you know what, you should just go ahead and let Russia do what it's going to do and everything. I challenge you to watch this movie and think the same thing. However, it's a really, really hard watch. So, you know, there's lots of trauma, a lot of dead bodies, a lot of people screaming in hospitals. So just know that before you go into it.
Yeah, I don't know if I have the fortitude for that, unfortunately. Yeah. But I'm really glad that there are people making these movies and talking about this.
Yes. And on a lighter note, you know, of course, Poor Things managed to get like the hair and makeup and the costumes. And I think the set designer, production designer, whatever. And absolutely well-deserved. That movie, whether you liked it or hated it, because, like, so a couple people on the Best Pick podcast were really not fans. Even they said it was a very pretty movie.
Now, Barbie didn't really get a whole lot of awards, unfortunately, but...
No, I think it got Best Song.
Yeah, I think Ryan Gosling was, like, the high point of the Oscars, from what I heard, him doing the I'm Just Ken song with a whole dance number and everything. And I don't watch the Oscars anymore. I haven't ever since the whole mix up with the wrong movie being told that they had won the Best Picture. But I may have to look up that segment because everybody was happy. But you also watched Barbie and really liked it.
I did. I mean, it wasn't like, I have to admit, I didn't really think it had a shot at Best Picture. I think it's nice that Ryan Gosling was nominated for actor, but I think it's really weird that Margot Robbie wasn't nominated for actress, because if you're going to nominate Ken, you kind of got to nominate Barbie. She was awfully good, and I don't think it's Best Picture worthy, but it is awfully fun, and it doesn't take itself seriously, and you don't have too much secondhand embarrassment. You know, there's a little bit of awkwardness because they don't know how the real world works, but not so much that it makes you uncomfortable, and it's just... It's like the least cynical movie I've seen in a while.
A lot of people have been talking about how delightful it is that Barbie and Oppenheimer came out on the same day. And instead of this narrative of them being pitched against each other, like in competition, all of these people were like, well, we'll just go ahead and watch both and call it Barbenheimer. And just, it's kind of delightful, I think.
Seriously, it really was pretty wonderful that they came out on the same weekend. I think it did well for both of them. I think they all just kind of like boosted each other up, which I think is great. That's how it should be. But I guess that'll wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. Getting closer to WonderCon.
Ooh, what day is that again?
I believe it starts on March 29th,
29th,
30th, and 31st. Yeah, so it's definitely me and Jada and Leland will be there. I think our friend Wade may be joining us, and our photographer friend Alex, though he wasn't sure he's going to be able to make it, and his brother has industry passes, so if so. But he always lets us post his photos, whether or not he got a press pass in. So you will see a lot of great cosplay. I think Wade is going to be impressed. He's been to the Anaheim Convention Center, but he went to DesignerCon, and that was... like a third the size of the WonderCon. I think he's really going to like all the costumes. It's just, it's an impressive sight. That big courtyard out front just filled with people in costume.
I was just about to say, because I love San Diego Comic-Con, but I feel like WonderCon has a better setup in that courtyard for just being able to look around and see all the people getting their best poses on in the sunlight.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. And that fountain that's there, too. And you get this, I mean, the front of the Anaheim Convention Center is dramatic. Obviously, it's dramatic. They used it for, like, Starfleet headquarters. Orders in the Picard TV series. I thought, what a nod to the nerds! But anyway, all that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So we should probably have a Night Vale episode next week?
I think so. Yes. Yes, I think you're right.
I'm looking at the calendar. I'm like, yes, the time does work. And of course, whatever else wanders across our path, maybe we'll catch up on some of these Oscar movies that we should have watched before the Oscars.
Well, but why would we prepare that much?
No. But anyway, one way or the other, we'll talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later.
And we don't see what the gods are about ready to do to Ares, but I'm sure it's
sorry,
not
sorry.
Fun.
We don't see what the gods are ready to do to Ares.
I hate it when I do that. it goes right to Hera talking to Hades, who's unconscious.
To Zeus. Darn it, we both keep doing that.
It's so irritating because I even wrote down Hades. Hang on a minute. I'm just going to, all right.